Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, the Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, December 24th. Merry Christmas Eve, everybody. Why are we here? I don't know.
Because we have an obligation and a duty.
Yeah.
All right, Dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't get paid time off. But your Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, December 24th is just moments away. But before we get into that, we need to thank the following unions for sponsoring this program. Unions like the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace, not Aerosmith Workers, Local 126 and District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, and the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. A giant thank you to those unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. And, of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show, even on Christmas Eve, is brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Now, we need to make sure that if you're listening on the live stream, all five of you can hear us. And we do that with our song of the day. So, Ben, please, song of the day.
Well, because it's the day before Christmas. John Lennon. So this is Christmas, and what have you done?
Yeah. Oh, you sing it? I thought maybe we were going to play a clip. I didn't realize that.
No, he sings it. That's Ben's daughter. She's joining us today.
Yo. Hi. Rachel Jarofsky.
Rachel, why don't you sing it?
And so this is Christmas. War is over. I was a soprano in elementary school choir.
The Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It is Tuesday, December 24th, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Late Fee Tuesday, and here's why. Great week. You have a good weekend, D?
Yep.
Yeah, you have a good
weekend. Great weekend.
What about me?
Oh,
what about me?
Grace, did you have a good weekend?
It was all right. I was working all weekend.
Good. All right. Well, I'm glad we got that. I had a great weekend. I saw a couple movies. How about that, huh? I saw, Blindspotting? Run, Don't Walk, good movie, 2018, loved it a lot, about gentrification in Oakland. Run, Don't Walk, and then I saw, what was the name of that movie? Knives Out. That's like a walk fast, but don't walk. You know what I'm saying? It's like a, not a full love.
Yeah, whatever all that means.
100%. It was pretty good. I liked it. I laughed. I had a good time with it. Hey, yo, put this down for pet peeves, that growing list of gripes, okay? This is something, folks. I don't want to sound all Donald Trump and everything.
Oh, God. What's coming out now?
You know, it's a bad introduction when you go, I don't want to go all Donald Trump on you. But I got a pet peeve here about British actors getting the roles of Americans. All right. This is something that's been going on a lot. And so Daniel Craig, you know who he is?
Yeah, James Bond.
Hello, mate. That's my British accent.
Okay. There went all the British. Defended them all.
He plays the lead in this movie. It's a very funny comedy. It's a, you know, it's sort of like an Agatha Christie type, you know, whodunit. And, you know, there's a murder and you got to figure out who did. Anyway, the inspector who figures it all out, I think he's from Tennessee or Kentucky or something like that. And he has a southern accent, but it's played by a Brit. And the accent sucks, D. Uncle Eldon. Your Uncle Eldon would have done a better job, all right? And so that's one of my pet peeves of the day. It's like, you know, why? There's tons of actors in America who could do it. What's the deal with the British?
Well, let's offend our southern listeners, too. Let's hear your southern accent.
I don't really...
you don't have one?
I don't really have a southern
sort
accent.
Sort of like, okay, here's how I feel about it, and that's an issue, so get it together.
That's actually not a bad...
That's like a southern mom on a PTA.
Okay. Wait, Dennis, let's hear your Southern accent.
Oh, hell, man. It's like in my family.
Yeah, do Uncle Alden.
Oh, my Uncle Alden, he calls me Little Denny. Now, come on, Little Denny.
Oh, my God.
Little Denny, figure it out. Come on, bud.
Anyway, so that's what I did this weekend. All right, but that's not what's on my mind, all right? So what else I did this week was I did a lot of reading. I was reading books I got from the library. We'll get to that in a little while, about Obama's first term. I'm utterly obsessed with this. I'm probably going to be writing about this. I'll definitely be talking about this in the ongoing year. And why it's relevant is this. There is a marked difference between the way Barack Obama led and the way Donald Trump leads right now, which reflects absolutely everything about the difference between Democrats and Republicans. Let me take you back in time, folks. Barack Obama had a legitimate mandate. He won. Not only did he win the Electoral College overwhelmingly, but he won the popular vote. In the case of Donald John Trump did not, as you all know, win the popular vote. And he won the Electoral College by three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And the margin of victory in each state was very slender. So he did not really have
collusion.
What are you talking about?
Thanks, Donald Trump. I needed that. So he had the exact opposite of a mandate. What's the difference? Barack Obama won with a mandate, but he acted like he didn't have a mandate. Donald John Trump won without a mandate and acts like he had a mandate. So in the case of Donald Trump's great triumph, which in quotes, which was the massive tax cut, he didn't care if over half the country was voted against it. He rammed it down our throats anyway. In the case of his Supreme Court nominees, he took right-wingers, Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, rammed them down our throats anyway. Barack Obama, as he was leaving office, remember Merrick Garland? He was like, I know what I'll do. I'll appeal to the good sense of fairness in the Republican Party and put this moderate up for the Supreme Court and just say, he's one of you, so you should like him. The Republicans said, hell no. No, we're holding out for a right winger. We're going to bank everything on winning the election. They wouldn't even allow him to have to come up for a hearing or anything. So it's the difference between Republicans and Democrats in their attitude. The Democrats always act as though they're the losing party. The Republicans act as though they're the winning party with a mandate, even when they don't have one. And this isn't relevant. This is relevant because what I was reading about Barack Obama's initiative for health care. First of all, even though health care has been alive in the Democratic Party for years and years and people desperately needed it, it wasn't even a given that he would push hard for it. There were many people in his cabinet who were urging him, don't even bother with health care, because like they had all these internal polls conducted by David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel saying, you know, like swing voters in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania were very cautious and nervous about whether they would lose their health care benefits. Very similar to what's going on in the debate right now with the moderates in the Democratic Party cautioning Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren for going too far. Anyway, so Barack Obama, he wanted, give him credit, I'll give him credit. He wanted that to be part of his legacy, to have a health care plan. He was very moved by some of the stories he heard from people on the campaign trail in 2008 who told him they lost their life savings because they got sick and they couldn't get a health care insurance because of existing conditions. Anyway, so when he gave his great compelling health care speech calling on the Republicans to support him, this is what he said. I'm going to read to you a copy of this speech. This is what I found out in a book going back in time. And this is a Barack Obama. One of the unique and wonderful things about America has always been our self-reliance, our rugged individualism, our fierce defense of freedom, and our healthy skepticism of government. Here he was calling on for shared sacrifice in the face of a crisis, the inability of many people to get health care. And it was like he was apologizing for shared sacrifice. It was as though he was appealing somehow or other, trying to make as though that this was not a Democratic New Deal populist program, but was more or less in line with what? Like Republican type values so that Republicans will sign on to it. This speech, by the way, was the one where Joe Wilson, the congressman from the South, blurted out, you're lying, and Obama. So much for, he's making this appeal, watering down his appeal for health care, and the guy calls him a liar anyway. And in the end, when they passed health care, only one Republican congressman voted for it. So this is where my mind is at right now, folks, as we head into 2020, as we head into another election. The Democrats, they're struggling with this issue today. How much can they dedicate themselves to real democratic values, and how much do they want to dilute those values and water down those values? And I'm starting to come to the conclusion, and I can't believe I'm saying this because I was a big Obama supporter, that Obama may have done a disservice to the Democratic Party and the causes that the Democrats advocate by saying things like, well, it was Michelle who said it, when they go low, we go high, as though there's a legitimate group of people in this country who believe the game should be played fair, as though negativity doesn't rule the world and that doesn't work, that negative campaigning does not work in elections. As though, and going back to 2004 when he said there's no red states, there's no blue states, it's just the United States, and Donald Trump is like, nope, there's just red states, and we own them, and we're going to win re-election and shove stuff down your throat. So anyway, that's what I was thinking as I was reading all these books from 2010, 2011. Here's the point I was going to make ultimately. One of the books I was reading, I got a notice from the library. It said, your book was overdue and we're automatically renewing it. Now, that's because Lori Lightfoot, let's give a shout out to Mayor Lori Lightfoot for this, Wendy, had the...
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Yes, shout thank you. Out. Yeah, shout out to Lori Lightfoot. She did away with overdue fines. That's very important for someone like me because I'm always overdue on my library books. And so what they do is automatic renewal. Now, I have two thoughts about this. One, I'm really happy that she did away with fines because people like me, you know, will not have to face fines. But then, on the other hand, I was overcome with guilt. Yeah, guilt. I was overcome with guilt, Rachel. Why did I feel so guilty? Because I had this book at home. What if there was somebody else out there who wanted this very book, but he couldn't get it because they kept renewing the book? Do you follow what I'm saying? So you know what I did, D? I brought the book back. How about that? Mm. So in the old days, all right, we were, it was a punishment. We returned our books because we were afraid of getting fined.
I believe I got in trouble in your house for overdue books.
I don't remember that at all.
I held on to a few too long, wasn't really on top of bringing them back. I was a little dysfunctional with my library card, and it would be like, God damn it, bring the book back. So, yeah.
Is that an imitation of me?
Yeah, who else would it be?
I have a vague memory of that. Of course, I'd be the one who had to pay the fine.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so now there's a new factor. Will people return books out of guilt? Now, this is a book written by a guy named John A. Alter. It came out in 2011. It was about the first year of Obama. I'm wondering how many people in the year 2019 want that book. But you know what? If there was one guy who wanted that book, I was keeping it from him. So I returned the book. All right? So now the big issue is, will people be motivated like a very Republican-style approach, which is, if you're late, we punish you, all right? That's very Republican.
Hit them?
Or will people be like motivated by a Democratic view, which is, oh my God, if I keep this book later, somebody will be a victim and I must return the book. So it's like Republican versus Democrat attitude with the library. More research is needed to see in the coming year whether people will hold onto their books or return them out of guilt. We have a great show today, everybody, on the eve of Christmas. Donald Trump will be stopping by to talk about some of his... Charles Schumer. Senator Charles Schumer will be stopping by to talk about Democratic strategies in the Senate for impeachment. You know, should the Dems even have an impeachment, D, right? With Donald Trump not cooperating. And I think Nancy Pelosi...
Okay, none of this is happening, guys.
I think, isn't Nancy Pelosi... Didn't she say she was coming, Rach? I thought Nancy Pelosi said she was coming.
In your dreams. Love Nancy Pelosi.
I do love Nancy Pelosi.
A good Catholic woman. Remember the other week when she was like, I'm Catholic.
Yeah, she was, because Trump said she hates me. And she
I don't hate anyone.
That's correct. I believe she does not hate anyone. Anyway, none of those people will be here. It'll be Dennis, me, and Rachel. And Cody Wilkins will be stopping by. We'll tell you all about Cody in a little while. So anyway, it's the Christmas Eve show. But before we do any of that, the young man from Alton, the man they call the doctor, with the news.
What's going on, everyone? My name's Dennis. We're about to find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. Then after that, we'll look over two of our new 20 new laws coming to Illinois in the new year.
Hold on. Before you do any of that,
what?
I want to ask you a question.
What?
Would you be more motivated by a fine forcing you to return a book, or by guilt that keeping the book would deprive somebody else of...
Fine.
Fine.
Same, fine, for sure.
So guilt would not play in it at all.
I would honestly forget if I didn't have a fine. And I forget with the fine, so I definitely forget without it.
Well, just so you know, you get notices from the library. We've extended your book for another 3 weeks. So you get the notice. But then, like you're saying, if there's no fine, you're like, oh, I don't have to return that book. So, yeah, they're going to see this. It'd be an interesting experience. Sorry.
All good. All good. Yeah. Like I said, we're going to find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. After that, we'll look over two of our new 20 new laws coming to Illinois in the new year. And being that it's Christmas Eve and all, after that, we're shutting down shop. That's right. Live stream chat room. If there's anything you'd like to say, get it in now and we'll read your comments before we end the live stream. But don't worry. Guess what? After today's shortened show, we'll be recording another Benny J bonus interview. It will be available for download tomorrow, Christmas Day. Our bonus interview guest, she's sitting right next to us.
And Cody Wilkins.
It's New York comedian, actress, and lucky her, daughter of our host, Ben Jarofsky. It's Rachel Jarofsky.
How's it going, guys?
With
Cody Wilkins.
There you go.
Another comic from Chicago.
And what are you guys going to talk about in this bonus interview?
Comedy, politics, comedy, and politics, right?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll have to ask you about growing up with Ben and all that, too.
Yeah.
We'll get into it's our father-daughter like, Benny J bonus special
like
available.
Therapy session.
You know, the fans have been begging for it.
Yeah,
so
that's what I'm saying.
We had to relent.
It'll be available at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. Merry Christmas. Yes, it's family time. No public events listed for our Illinois Governor, J.B. Pritzker, this Christmas Eve. But I'm sure he and his family have some filthy rich holiday event planned. Rumor has it everyone in the family's getting a boat this year, Ben.
Okay, well, you know, it's good. It's been a good year for JB.
I know, the filthy rich guys. Ben, what do you think the Pritzker family has planned for the holidays?
Well, the Pritzker family is Jewish, so they're probably going to Chinatown. You know, a lot of Jewish people go to Chinatown on Christmas Eve and enjoy a delicious dinner. I've not heard any news. By the way, I go to Chinatown every Christmas Eve. I've never seen the Pritzkers there ever. So maybe they're going
maybe
to,
this is the year.
This could be the year they follow me to Chinatown. I don't know. It could be in Florida. I've not heard from JB. He's really keeping it low. 2020 is going to be a big year for JB Pritzker. He's going to have to come through on the fair tax proposal. That's the top of his agenda. That would be the most radical restructuring of Illinois politics he could come up with. It was definitely the most radical approach that he advocated. I'm a big believer in it, big supporter of it. This will be the showdown year for it. It's going to be a real tough challenge for him to get that 60% of the vote he needs. So he's resting up. That's what he's doing. He's resting up for the big fight ahead in 2020.
All right. Well, enough about the governor's lavish Christmas lifestyle and statewide news. Yes, it's a slow news day, people. We have an update on Abraham Lincoln's hat.
Okay. It's an important story.
Yeah, the story goes all the way back to 2012, believe it or not. So there's a stovepipe hat displayed at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield. But was it actually a hat worn by Abraham Lincoln? For years, WBEZ reporter David McKinney has been trying to get to the bottom of this. Sources he has spoken to have said, no, that is not Lincoln's hat. It's just a regular stovepipe hat. That hat was once appraised at $6.5 million and was the cornerstone of a $25 million haul of Lincoln artifacts bought in 2007 by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library Foundation using private donations. Results from a 16-month study have finally come in, and David McKinney, now 7 years into this, has the scoop. A 16-month state study has found no evidence to authenticate that a multi-million dollar stovepipe hat purportedly owned by Abraham Lincoln and once displayed at his presidential museum actually belonging to America's 16th president. The 54-page report obtained by WBEZ focused on the museum's lack of due diligence in studying the hats before its purchase, among other things. If this interests you at all, go read Dave McKinney's work, chicago.suntimes.com. Ben, catch us up here. Hatgate.
Hatgate. First of all, a shout out to Dave McKinney. He was on the show, as you recall. He's a very intrepid investigative reporter. He used to work for the Sun-Times, expert on local politics, Illinois politics, Chicago politics, especially state politics. Here's the thing. When you're a reporter, you find yourselves, I'm speaking from experience, just obsessed with stories that perhaps the rest of the world thinks you're a little weird to be obsessed with. People say that a lot about me. Can you believe that, D? My utter obsession with things like, you know, TIF funding. I've heard a lot. Marijuana, legalizing reefer for years and years, advocating marijuana. Ben, would you stop it already? And so you just get focused and fixated on things. And Dave McKinney is no different than anybody else and apparently is fixated on Lincoln's hat. So you're probably like, well, come on, Ben, there's more important things to be fixated on. I don't know. You know, people going around saying it's Lincoln's hat. Lincoln's a big deal in this state. And it's from that hat, I believe, that they draw lots to see who gets to write up the map, the Illinois legislative map, if there's a tie. This gets into one of my favorite obsessions. You talk about things that I'm obsessed with. The way we do redistricting, not just in the state of Illinois, but across the country. If you're on top, if you control the legislature, if you control the governor's house, you run the map. So if it's a Democratic state like Illinois, Democrats draw the map. If it's a Republican-led state like, let's say, Michigan or Wisconsin back in the day of Scott Walker, the Republicans draw the map, and they will draw a map to favor their party. In Illinois, the rule is if it's split, if you have a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature, then they draw from a hat, and the hat is Lincoln's hat. Now, it turns out it's not Lincoln's hat, or it may not be Lincoln's. I remember when the story first came out, they were like doing studies and examination of like hair follicles or dandruff that they found on the thing. It was real deep dive. Something like, uh-oh, if this is not Lincoln's hat, then the whole process of remapping is not legitimate. Well, I got news for you, folks. It's not legitimate anyway. It's absolutely an illegitimate process which favors whichever party is in power. I have long argued that every single state should have a fair remap system where it's just computers draw it. That would actually get America back to where Obama thought it should be. Obama, remember, I was talking earlier today, it was always, you know, when they, there's no red states, there's no blue states, it's just the United States. In reality, the Republican Party views it all as red and blue. And they don't care about blue, they just care about red. And they don't care if they lose a majority of the votes in the race for presidency, as long as they get a majority of the electoral count votes. And so they'll impose policies that a relative handful, a minority of people care about who live in underpopulated red states. That's the Republican view of the world. If you had a mapping situation where you fairly, where you just had a computer draw up the map by population without any kind of consideration toward party, you might have more of what Barack Obama was being idealistic about. A state where this is like a common good, where there is no concentration of party in one district or another, where you would have congressmen who have to learn to appeal to all the people of all political persuasions. You wouldn't have like this gentleman that I just read about in the paper today, Matt Shea, a congressman, a right-wing congressman, 34 years old, out of Washington, the state of Washington, who's an absolute extremist. Who makes all sorts of provocative remarks about the alt-right, in favor of the alt-right. You wouldn't have a guy like him. He couldn't possibly win. So that would be the reality, of course, when you gerrymander a state. Republicans get to select who they want, and that's the kind of guy that they get. So I can share the obsession with McKinney over the hat, if for no other reason than that hat is the vessel from which they draw the numbers to see who gets to draw up the legislative map. So good for Dave McKinney. He's keeping us honest on Lincoln's hat. I guess that's a story that we'll follow into the next year. We should bring McKinney back on just to talk about general corruption, and maybe Dan Mahopoulos as well, talk about general corruption in the state of Illinois.
There you go. Long overdue update on Abraham Lincoln's hat. Just so you know, one of my goals in 2020, guys, is to get the Ben Jarofsky Show on the map so much to at least get one of those Bulls hats that Ben wears worth, I don't know, $20?
I've got about 10 Bulls hats. Someone was talking about, I bumped into a guy the other day, and he was telling me he has a collection of earrings. I think he said he had, don't quote me on this, D, 300 earrings. Every day he wore a different earring. And I go, your earrings are like my hat, my Bulls hats. Where's this guy? And then he said to me, oh, I love that hat you're wearing. I go, well, thank you.
That was me. We were talking about that. I have so many earrings.
No, it wasn't you. Who was he? He was a waiter somewhere. That'll come to me.
All right, on to the city news. And no, none of this involves hats. No public events listed for Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot this Christmas Eve. Ben, it's about 1 in the afternoon. What do you think Mayor Lightfoot is doing right now?
Luncheon.
Oh, really?
Luncheon, absolutely.
Luncheon. Excellent.
Yeah, she's having luncheon. This is good. She's having some water.
Oh, and water. She loves luncheons, everybody. All right, well, this happened on Monday, and Ben, I know you wanted to talk about this. The CEO of Boeing, Dennis Muilenburg, probably saying that wrong, Muilenburg is now the former CEO of Boeing. Was he fired? Did he resign? Was he involved in something shady? Well, Boeing is based in Chicago, so probably. Ben, your thoughts?
Well, this, of course, is the culmination of a story that's been brewing for quite a while. Two tragic crashes involving Boeing jets over the last couple of years. And the implication, of course, is that Boeing knew that there was deficiencies with their airplanes, and they covered up evidence of it and allowed the planes to keep flying, even though even after the first crash, there was a danger that it would happen again. Ultimately, they did put the planes in the mothballs, and they conducted an investigation, but by then it was too late. And so it was just a matter of time. To me, the interesting thing about Boeing beyond this is that it's a presence in the city of Chicago, Dean. I remember when they moved to Chicago, but it would have been about 2005, something like that. And it was such a big deal in the city of Chicago. We showered a lot of money on them to get them to move their corporate headquarters from Washington, the state of Washington, to downtown Chicago, somewhere in the Loop. And it was considered a great triumph for the city of Chicago. This is sort of the Chicago mentality, that Boeing would decide to have just its corporate headquarters in Chicago. So that just meant the chieftains of Boeing, like this gentleman, Muilenburg, who just stepped down, would be living in Chicago and operating in Chicago. But, of course, the jobs that would benefit most people would be, I don't know, in the state of Washington. They had some facilities in North Carolina as well. So ordinary people in the city of Chicago would really not benefit from the fact that Boeing moved here, but we gave them a lot of money, public subsidies to encourage them, that's in quotes, to come to Chicago. So it's, whenever I hear Boeing, I think of that. That was like a big deal in the city of Chicago in 2005, 2006, something like that. Articles in the Tribune, you know, will Boeing come to Chicago? Like breathlessly. This is like one of those typical hyped up things like the Olympics. Will Chicago get the Olympics? Like it's going to benefit anybody in the city of Chicago. So, yeah, I do. That's kind of what I think about when I think about Boeing, the fact that we were supposed to be so excited by the fact that Boeing came to the city of Chicago. And I'm looking now. Is it when they don't even mention in the New York Times story that Boeing is headquartered in Chicago. Once again, you were treated like suckers and saps, Chicagoans.
Now, last week we had a fun time talking about Ben's favorite things to gripe about in the year 2019. Well, Ben, I think we have your new favorite thing for 2020. The following comes from the Chicago Sun-Times. Are you used to free or cheap parking in the West Loop?
Oh, yeah, man.
Forget it. You don't have much longer to enjoy those luxuries. Starting as early as January 2nd, parking rates at existing meter spaces in the West Loop will more than double from $2 per hour to $4.50. And soon after, possibly this spring, it'll cost you $4.50 per hour to leave your car on tons of other blocks as the city plans to install dozens of new meters on the streets that currently have free parking. Now, this one, it's close to home, doesn't it, Ben Jarofsky?
Yes. As anybody knows who's ever come with me to the studio, I have this habit of when I drive, a lot of times we take the train.
Well, for those who don't know, our studio is located in the West Loop.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. He went to radio school, so he knows how to do that kind of thing. Anyway, so generally when I drive far from the West Loop. I think it's like a mile and a half, and I park, and then I walk. I do that for a couple reasons. One, there are no meters, so I don't have to pay. Two, I need the exercise. Three, there's a lot of times there's no parking in the West Loop, so this is when I do drive. But I got a feeling, D, I predicted this, didn't I?
Yeah.
They're coming
you
after me,
it.
Man. I said, I knew it. I go, you know what? It's only a matter of time before they come after me and figure out where I park, and I think they did that, so they're coming after me, man. So I guess I'm not going to drive at all in the coming year, D. I'll just take the train.
Ah, damn it. There went my ride. All right. Though the mayor's office said as recently as Monday that the changes would come January 1st, the city's finance department clarified later that same day that it could take take weeks or months to implement the new rules, even though the law goes in effect at the start of the year. For West Loop residents and visitors, that can mean a gradual change this spring from fee street parking to $4.50 an hour metered parking. The city plans to start by installing new meters in the busy commercial area around Halsted and Randolph Streets, but that might not happen until March. From there, installation could trickle west through the West Loop, though the city could collaborate with residents and community groups on exactly when and where to keep adding meters.
And let me just remind everybody, just to another gripe, I should be positive as we head into the Christmas season, but I'm still griping about this one. The revenue that you put in, the money that you put into those meters does not go to the city of Chicago. It goes to the private operators who own the rights to put the meters on the streets. They're collecting the revenue. So you figure, oh, you know, I'll put some money in the meter. The money will go support the Chicago Public Schools. The money will support the libraries or the parks or the police department, help pay the pension costs. None of that. Money goes to people who bought the streets, the right to tax your streets back in 2008 or 2009 when that Parker meeting deal went through. So they knew, you know, they it was a captive audience. It was a great deal for the parking meter operators, a lousy deal for the taxpayers, the city of Chicago, and the residents. And they're squeezing us, D. They're putting a squeeze in us.
So there you are. That's what's going on in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. Christmas Eve, like I said, kind of a slow news day.
Mm-hmm.
Update on Abraham Lincoln's hat. But we'll keep you posted online as these stories update if they become available. And like I said, but before we get out of here, though, we're going to do two new laws here.
Oh, yeah.
Turns out in 2020, over 250 laws are going to be taking place, brand new laws in Illinois. And, well, thanks to the folks at WTTW, we have 20 of them to talk about. I believe we've done three, all right? So 17 more to go. We're going to be doing this through the holiday season. But before we get out of here, we'll do two more. It's the 20 new laws of 2020.
That's correct.
All right, got the sleighs going.
I like the sleighs, man.
Yeah, you know, makes it gives it the feel for it. All right, new law coming in 2020. This one involves, let's see, I'm going to find a good one here. We did saving for higher education. Mental health resources. Public colleges and universities must make mental health and suicide prevention resources readily accessible to students starting in the 2020-2021 academic year. Students often feel pressure, whether it be stress from taking out student loans or their efforts to excel in class, said Representative Karina Villa, who sponsored HB 3404 in a statement. The quote continues, "With my experience as a school social worker, I believe it is extremely valuable for students to be aware of the mental health resources that are available to them." So some mental health resource laws coming in 2020.
Well, I applaud her for that. I'd like to point out we're very inconsistent when it comes to mental health issues, not just in the city of Chicago, state of Illinois, but yes, every now and then we make a little half step in the right direction, like with this bill. In the meantime, the city is woefully short of mental health services for huge chunks of particularly poorer areas, high crime areas. The clinics were closed. And when was it? When did they close the clinics? 2011 and six clinics in high crime areas. I think it was one of the cruelest acts that Mayor Rahm forced down our throats. And Mayor Lightfoot has still not opened the clinics that were closed. So it's like we make these half steps forward and then like three steps back. A very strange attitude that we have toward mental health. People privately go to therapists. People are all freaking out. They seek the private counsel, pay for it out of their insurance if they have it, pay for it out of their pockets if they have it. But then we pretend when it comes to a public expense that it's something we could get rid of. Mayor Rahm treated it as though like it was a major budget savings, that he was doing a great favor for the people of Chicago by getting rid of the mental health clinics, saving us relatively handful of dollars in the budget, which was worth billions of dollars. As I said, it hit hardest at the people who were most vulnerable and needed the help the most and had the least amount of money to get their own mental health services. So here we are, how many years later, and we're still just sort of making little half steps in the right direction. And then almost every day or every week, I'll read a story in the newspaper about a confrontation between a police officer and somebody in the street who's freaking out. And I'm like, why has this come down to this face-to-face encounter in the streets of Chicago? Why wasn't there any kind of intervention along the way? And it, obviously, we've decided as a collective society that we can't afford it. But every now and then, oh, I know what we're going to do. We're going to have some mental health services for kids in public schools. Well, it's good. You know, like I said, it's like a half step in the right direction. I should be happier and brighter and more optimistic with Christmas coming on, right?
Yeah, all please. Right.
So give me a story that I can be optimistic. Give me another law that I can be happy about.
All right, well, that next one I had was not at all. So stall, and I'll find one. How about that?
Another. Well, go to the one you had anyway. I'm just curious what that was.
It would be really bad to transition into that. Okay, you really right. didn't set it up that well. All right, here we go. This one is decent. Happy. All right, we can put the sleigh bells here for this one. Mm-hmm. All right, this one involves fire alarms in dog kennels. Kennels that are not staffed at all times and board cats and dogs must be equipped with a fire sprinkler or fire alarm mm-hmm. monitoring system that triggers notification to local emergency responders when activated. HB 3390 was introduced after 29 dogs died in a fire in January.
No, I remember that fire. All right, good bill. All right, needed, necessary, can't think of anything to gripe about, complain about. Good job, General Assembly.
There you are.
Governor Pritzker for signing. I'm not even sarcastic in any way. It's a good bill. There we go.
Five down, 15 more to go. It's the 20 new laws of 2020, all this holiday season on the Ben Jarofsky Show.
That's correct.
All right, so there you are. That's our little show for today.
We're going to shut it down and bring on Rachel and Cody.
Absolutely.
As a bonus.
All right, everybody. So make sure to download this. It's going to be available to both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and wherever else you download podcasts. Subscribe to The Ben Jarofsky Show. Like The Ben Jarofsky Show. Find us on social media at Benny J Show, B-E-N-N-Y, the letter J Show. Tons of Benny J bonus interviews. The Carlos Ramirez Rosa interview just dropped on Monday.
Carlos Ramirez Rosa is a good one. Fellow graduate of Whitney Young High School.
Oh,
we
Dolphins.
Have a lot of Dolphins in the studios today.
All right, everybody. So we're signing off here. Like I said, go get this interview. It's going to be available tomorrow morning, 5 a.m. Ben Jarofsky and Rachel Jarofsky.
Cody Wilkins.
You're going to be hearing all kinds of family stories and everything. Yes. It's going to be a fantastic
interview. Cody's going to tell all the family secrets on this show. I can't wait. Oh, man. Cody's parents are like, what?
So, Ben, sign us off here.
I like to thank the following. I like to thank Nancy Pelosi for stopping by, Chuck Schumer for stopping by.
Nice.
And Donald Trump couldn't have done the show without you. And of course, the man, the myth, the legend, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois. And as Cody Wilkins can tell you, back home in Alton, they call him White Lightning. Give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. See you on Thursday, everybody.
Not a doctor. No one calls me White Lightning. I'm Dennis. And remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows and that Benny J bonus interview. All right, I'm going to remind you one more time. Chicago.suntimes.com, chicagoreader.com, and wherever else you download podcasts. We'll see you the day after Christmas. We'll be back.